FM Rewind, Vow 88.1.
As I mentioned earlier on, that as we wrap up the month of June, we reflect on what's been an eye-opening and powerful journey. A month dedicated to unpacking men's health, struggles, and silent battles. And well, I also mentioned earlier on that we'll be joined by a phenomenal author who wrote an incredible book that we'll be talking about. Martin Apeldes is in studio. And tonight, we tend to a deeply overlooked issue, which is sexual abuse experienced by men and how it shapes the way they father and lead their families. Now, according to the World Health Organization, sexual violence include any sexual act or attempt to obtain sex, without any consent, regardless of the relationship. This includes rape, unwanted touching, and even non-contact abuse. Sexual assault can also happen to anyone, but male survivors often carry what you call a silent pain. They deal with shame, self-doubt, confusion. Some even feel they're not strong enough. You know, they feel like they're not man enough because of the weight and the challenges they carry. Others are haunted by involuntary physical reactions during the abuse, which they sometimes misinterpret. Hence, we have to talk about this tonight. Now, joining us this evening in studio is Martin Apeldes, who shares his deeply personal journey in his book titled The Pumpkin Van. And as I mentioned the title of the book, I'm carrying it right now. It's an amazing book, eye-opening book, and fascinating. You know, they always say that you don't have to judge a book by its cover, but this one is one of those books that you should get. It is titled The Pumpkin Van. It talks about his life story, which involves pain, survival, and ultimately hope, you know, from enduring sexual abuse to battling substance abuse. He is joining us live and direct in studio. Good evening, Martin. Thank you so much for gracing us with your presence.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for the invite, man. Really appreciate it.
Now, I did mention earlier on that we are talking about a topic that is rarely discussed, a topic that is rarely spoken about. Mm. Gender-based violence and sexual abuse towards men.
Mm.
Why is it rarely spoken about, especially within our society?
Well, I suppose we have these constructs, you know. I mean, you're tough and cowboys don't cry and, you know, don't talk about it, it'll go away. And then you add on to that, you know, boys can't be raped, only men are rapists, only women are victims. And, you know, it goes on and on, and it just shames people into silence. And, you know, we really need to start talking out about it because the numbers are quite shocking.
Now, in your book, you spoke openly about being abused by both men and women as a child. What gave you the courage to speak about the challenges that you faced?
Well, I kind of, you know, for me, the turning point in my life was when I saw 200 other men on the Oprah Winfrey Show in 2010 speaking about what they'd been through. One of the guy that actually put the whole show together was Tyler Perry in those days, because he's also a victim of sexual abuse. And these guys kind of gave me the courage to start talking about what happened to me. Mm. And that's when my healing started. And I then kind of looked at it and went, well, we need to start this process in South Africa, because at the time I didn't know how bad it was. We still worked on figures of 1 in 6 boys and 1 in 4 girls. And so I started talking and sharing my story, and I kind of felt that me sharing my story gave other men permission to start talking about it, and therefore it started the healing process for them.
You know, as men, we sometimes don't comprehend or understand sexual abuse towards us. Mm. It's even hard for us to interpret what exactly sexual abuse, especially towards men, is. How can you paint a picture?
Well, let's start with the legal definition. I suppose it's anything sexual of a sexual nature perpetrated on somebody younger or under the age of 16 by somebody older. Right, so it's digit penetration, in other words, using a finger or something. It's penetration with an object, bottles, candles, anything like that. In the anus, vagina, forced penetration. So in other words, if a woman forces a young boy to penetrate her, that is considered to be sexual abuse. Or, you know, performs oral sex on a young boy. Or forces a young boy to perform oral sex on a young girl, you know, all that sort of thing. So that's the legal definition.
Now, from your experience, especially when it comes to dealing with young men who come to you, explain and tell you about their experience, on a daily basis, How are we looking at when it comes to perhaps the number of boys that are silently abused? Just an estimation, and to paint a picture that it is happening.
Yeah, in South Africa, 10% of all boys are sexually abused every single year. Right, by age 16, you'd have 33.9% of all girls will have suffered sexual abuse, and 36.8% of all boys will have suffered sexual abuse. So it's a small percentage, but then when we look on the flip side and you look at the services available, you know, there's over 425 rape crisis centers in South Africa. Only 16 profess to support boys and girls. The rest are only for girls. So, you know, there's no space for these boys to go out and find help and get support and that sort of thing.
Mm. And you also spoke about the experience of recovering alone, you know, and going through so many challenges, especially having to transition from, you know, your teenage to being a young adult. How did that shape your perspective when it comes to male vulnerability? Because as men, we're told that, no, man, you don't have to cry. You're a man. You're strong. You're a leader. You know, if you show your emotions, then you're weak, you expose your vulnerability. But how did it shape your perspective when it comes to the importance of being vulnerable as a man?
Well, I only learned to be vulnerable in my 40s, right? So when I was a teen, I mean, I just suppressed all those emotions. I just pushed them down. And my way of dealing with it was through addiction, you know. So, you know, I think addiction is not a disease you're born with, you know. It's not a disease. It's something you use to hide a pain or to mask a pain. Mm. So the best way to deal with my pain was just to drink it away and snort coke and, you know, do all those fun things. It's not a way to live. It really isn't. And it's very important for us to talk about these things so that we give people permission to seek healing and to understand that they're not alone. Because, I mean, as we heard in the numbers, there's more boys that suffer sexual abuse in South Africa than girls. So,
And also, speaking of addiction, it's a topic that we spoke about 2 weeks ago. We also had men talking about how they got into addiction and how hard it was to, you know, recover from addiction. And we also have so many young men who go back to smoking drugs or, you know, relapse into any form of addiction to cope. But I feel like we need to advise so many young men that it is not a solution for you to deal with certain challenges by, you know,
with using
any substance abuse. How can you advise young men, especially when it comes to the importance of just, you know, dealing with challenges in a different way as opposed to going to any form of addiction or substance abuse?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for young guys is they don't know any other, they don't have any options, you know, so we end up in addiction. At the end of the day, I mean, giving up the addiction was the easy part. You know, it was dealing with the underlying causes of the addiction that was the difficult thing. And that took immense courage and pain. And, yeah, I mean, it's not easy recovering from this sort of thing. It takes time and it takes a lot of effort and a lot of time. So I would say to people, you know, find someone to talk to. You know, if people come to my organization, for instance, Matrix Men, I'm not going to look at you and go, ah, you're an addict. I don't want to deal with you. You know, just leave, you know, whatever. When you clean, come back. When you sober, come back, you know. No, come. Talk to us. Let's start talking about the underlying causes of that addiction so that we can begin to unravel and fix the mind. And once you fix your mind, you lose that desire to use drugs. I mean, what is a drug? You know, at the end of the day, food's a drug, sex is a drug, porn is a drug, you know, alcohol's a drug. We can go on. Work is a drug, gym is a drug, running is a drug. You know, if anything used out of proportion, out of, you know, out of a healthy balance is a form of addiction.
Very important what you said, especially when it comes to fixing your mind. If you just tuned in, we are in conversation with Martin Pelders. He is the founder of Matrix Men Africa, a mental health and wellness coach, an activist and public speaker, and he's also the author of the book titled The Pumpkin Van. And speaking of The Pumpkin Van, we're going to dive and talk about this phenomenal book, A Story of Recovery, Hope and Honesty. That and more is coming up right after this.
FM Rewind, File 88.1.
Now, Martin, you then started what you call Matrix Men back in 2011.
Yeah.
What led to this? And I want you to take us back to the day you decided that I'm going to come up with Matrix Men.
Yeah. Sure. It was a deeply, probably one of the most painful days of my life, actually. You know, I'd repressed a lot of the memories of the things that had happened to me. And that night I started remembering things that my own mother had done to me as a kid. And I was crying. I was struggling with this concept that this person who was supposed to love and care for me and nurture me and encourage me and everything had done this sort of thing. You know, that's aside the her violent outbursts and beatings and constantly telling me that I wasn't good enough, you know, that sort of thing, which came later, you know, because sexual abuse doesn't happen in a capsule. It's always accompanied by other forms of abuse, right? So I always say that victims of sexual abuse generally will suffer emotional, physical, verbal abuse at home. So they go out and they're trying to find that loving, caring, nurturing connection outside of the home, and that's when they become vulnerable and fall victim or prey to sexual abusers. So, you know, homes with single parent homes, that sort of thing. So when I started remembering it, I remember looking up and going, God, why did you let this happen to me? It's like I was a kid, man. I was just a child, you know. And this sentence popped into my head and said, if it hadn't happened to you, who would go on to help others? And that was kind of where it started. You know, from there, I tried to find help from psychologists in South Africa. And, yeah, they just were shocked when I told them, like, after three or four sessions, I'd say, hey, you know, I was raped as a child. And they were, like, shocked or taken aback, not understanding what I was trying to say to them. And then they would get scared and kind of back off. And then I would leave because now the trust is broken. So eventually I got to a point where I was like, you know what, I need to start something. I need to start something to help other men, to talk about it, to give them a space to begin healing, you know. And, yeah, that's where we started. 2011, I thought I'd get hundreds of men running through the door, but it doesn't work like that, you know.
It took time.
Yeah, it took time. And we deal with seven guys at a time per group. So we run groups, and we only allow seven men in. So we'll run three, four groups a week. And, yeah, but it's, you know, we don't have hundreds of guys coming through and talking about this. It's still something that's very shameful, something that they don't like to discuss.
And why was it important to create a space by men, for men, specifically around sexual trauma and sexual abuse?
Well, it's important where men feel comfortable enough and safe enough to talk about things. So if you sit in a room with four or five other guys that have been through the same thing as you, you feel comfortable talking about it. You know, you feel a little bit more comfortable being able to express yourself and tell people what happened to you. So that was important to create those spaces. And still today, I don't mix groups. So we'll support women. I have a woman that runs a female support group, but I have our men's groups are men's groups, and that's it. There's, you know, nobody else comes into that space.
And the name Matrix Man, it has a powerful meaning. And I'd like us to dive deep into how the name came about, Matrix Man. I mean, when you hear the word Matrix,
you think of the movie, right?
Think of the movie. Exactly what I wanted to say, eh?
Yeah. It's got nothing to do with the movie.
Yeah.
Right. So this Matrix is something that encloses something precious, right? So the movie was kind of based on what they call the mathematical matrix, which is a square with the numbers cascading down. And then in medical terms, you get the pericardium, which surrounds your heart, is called the matrix, and the womb is called the matrix, right? But I based the Matrix Men on the geological matrix, which is, it's like a big rock, and it looks very hard and impenetrable outside, but when you break it open, there's these amethyst and crystal and beautiful gems inside. And the theory was that men who've been abused develop this hard outer shell, right? But if we can break that shell open, they're beautiful, precious jewels inside, you know? And the other day, I was driving somewhere one day, and I was like, wow, you know, Matrix, you know, in terms of medical thing, I was thinking about Matrix and families and that sort of stuff. And I got this idea in my head that a Matrix for a woman is the womb, right? So in the womb, the baby grows, it's nurtured, it's protected, it's kept safe, it's fed, you know, all that sort of stuff. And I said, like, but that's a woman thing. How does the masculine fit into this? And then the idea popped into my head that says, when the baby is born, the father becomes the matrix of the family. So he surrounds his family with his arms. He protects them. He nurtures them. He keeps them safe. He teaches them. He mentors them. He provides for them, you know? So that's the kind of the idea behind the matrix. So.
Now, you then came up with a phenomenal book with titled The Pumpkin Van, a story of recovery, hope, and honesty. Tell us about the day you decided that, well, I want to tell my story. I want to inspire.
I didn't want to. To be honest, I didn't want to.
Yeah. But the final decision of... A leap of faith, you know.
So I was in about 2013, I was counseling a guy from Australia. And this guy kept saying to me, Martin, tell my story, you know. And he was like, he's a broken man. You know, I still, today, I support him as well, you know. But he just kept saying, tell my story. So I started writing his story, but man, it was graphic. It was really, really so bad. I mean, this poor guy, I mean, his mother, his uncle, his brother, the priests at church, the teachers at school, everybody had their way with this poor guy. And I thought, I can't write this story. It's just too much, you know? So I'd written a lot of it, and then I kind of deleted it all, and I started again, and I thought, well, let me tell other men's stories from my perspective, you know, starting with my story and how I met them and how I started helping them and supporting them. So in the book, it's not just my story, but there's the story of this guy from Australia. There's a story of a guy who's a triple murderer. He's doing life in local prison. There's a story of a guy who was a pedophile. He, unfortunately, he took his own life a year and a half ago. And there's stories of four or five other guys and what they went through. So I kind of detail mainly my story, but then I bring in these other stories, and I show people the net effect of not helping boys heal from the trauma that they suffered as children.
And why is it important for you to include multiple voices and stories from different people?
You know, everything has a cascade effect, you know. So these boys that suffer this abuse as children who don't find healing are the guys that grow up to become the wife beaters, the murderers, yeah, the rapists, you know, all that sort of stuff. Mm. And we have this cycle in this country where, yeah, I mean, if you look at the stats, right? I mean, the stats, I did a presentation the other day with the stats on femicide. It started back 5 years ago. It was like 1,800. Last year, it was 5,574 women were murdered by their loved ones. So I'm kind of looking at this going, you know what? If men are the problem, why are we not fixing men? Now, I'm trying to show people where this anger comes from, right? So my brother-in-law is a bright guy. He wrote a book called Killer Stories. It's about serial killers in South Africa, right? Mm. And he wrote his book about six serial killers. He did his PhD on these guys. And I found him one day and I said, Bryn, how many of these guys were abused as children? He said, man, all of them, of course, all of them were abused. And originally he interviewed, I think, 25 serial killers in South Africa. I mean, it was like hard work. So there is a net effect. These boys that grow up with abusive childhoods, whether it be physical, emotional, sexual, whatever, you know, become, the outcomes for them are so bad because there's no support. Right? Mm-hmm. There's no place where these young boys can go and find help and get healing. So they resort to that one thing that men have in abundance that women don't have, anger and strength. Mm. Right? Mm. So it's like that little chemical in our bodies called testosterone. It kicks in when we're 11, 12, 13, and man, things just go crazy from there. So we have this crazy strength and we resort to this violence because we haven't been given the language to talk about how we were hurt. Mm. We don't have the ability to say, hey, I was raped as a child. Mm. Hey, I was beaten as a child. Hey, you know, so we need to start this healing process. If we ever want to reduce the stats on the terrible violence and rape and sexual abuse and everything that we have in this country, we really need to start healing the boys. Otherwise, we just, it's going to get worse. I can guarantee you it's going to get worse. I've never had a year where the stats have actually reduced, right? Mm. Besides 23, 24, it came down by like 200. You know, the rapes came down by 200. I mean, that's not even a reduction in crime. That's just a blip, you know, because it was a bad year for somebody, you know. So we need to start talking about these things. We need to start creating spaces for young boys to be able to talk about this. They need to have permission to talk about it, knowing that they're not alone. They're not the only ones that have gone through this. And this is why I'm so vociferous about talking about this.
Mm-hmm. And that's the question that I wanted to ask Mr. Martin, that what's the solution? Because year in, year out, we are now perceived as a country with one of the highest cases of gender-based violence. I interact with tourists a lot, and one negative thing they always say about South Africa is the issue of safety.
Yeah.
You know, they worry about their safety.
Look, I mean, there's so much in this country that needs healing, right? I mean, gee, we come in 94, 93, you know, whatever, we have the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which, you know, so people told stories and nobody really healed, you know? Mm. I mean, let's be honest, okay? I mean, the majority, I mean, if we look at the 10 major forms of abuse in the world, right? It's classified as growing up in single parent home, growing up in poverty, growing up in a violent environment, okay? Already those three, 70% of South Africans have suffered, right? Mm. And we're not healing those things. You know what I mean? I call it what we call a slave mentality. You know, South African young boys in South Africa have been taught by their parents that they're not worth excelling. They're not worth, you know, when we have this, I call it the boy attitude, you know, you're nothing more than just a boy, you know. It's when I was growing up, I mean, we could walk up to an adult and say to him, hey, boy, you know, it's that mentality is kind of pervasive, and it's been passed on generationally. So we need to start healing there, you know? And we need to start talking about these things and get really honest with each other and stop making it about race, and let's start making it about healing. Let's make it about honesty. And we're not honest. And listen, by the way, you know, around the world, they're also fooling themselves, because in many, many countries, they don't perceive as women raping younger boys as a sexual crime, right? It's not classified as that. So it's only men who rape boys. Then it's suddenly, oh, well, that's a crime, you know. But women, it's cool. So you'll see in America, it's starting to get more and more, they're getting more vocal about it, with teachers that are getting arrested for raping young boys and that sort of thing. So it's starting to happen. But, I mean, it's as bad around the world. We're not alone here. We just have a much more violent society because of our history, essentially.
And I want us to talk about the importance of true support for men, especially when they go through a phase where it's very difficult. How important is support?
Well, where do men get support? You know, we don't. You know, when we meet our buddies, it's like around the braai, we have a shish and lama, and we have some beer, and we talk rubbish, and we talk trash about women, and we talk about cars, and we talk about the GTI that's just come out. We don't talk about real stuff. We're afraid to talk about real stuff. And to me, I think we need to start creating those environments where men can get together and start talking about. And we've seen a proliferation of organizations that are starting to invite men into these spaces, and I think we need to get more honest about these things and create those spaces for men to be able to sit down and talk about these issues. But also we need to reshape mental health for men, because I mean, if you look at Freud and Adler and Jung and all these guys, I mean, they were as messed up, they were like victims of child abuse themselves, and they couldn't talk about these things. So when they designed psychology and all that sort of stuff, it was designed around the feminine, right, and healing the feminine. There's no space there for men. You know, why? 85%, I think, of all therapists are women, right? So a very small percentage of male therapists out there. And then I think also about 80% of all patients that go for therapy are women as well. So men are kind of being left out of it. And we're not changing the narrative and making it attractive for them to come in, right? And say, hey, dude, if you're struggling with low self-esteem, if you're struggling with addiction, if you're struggling with anger issues, if you're struggling with all these things, come and see us. Come and speak to us. We're not going to judge you. I'm not going to blame you and say it's because of your masculinity or it's toxic masculinity or it's patriarchy. You know, it's almost like when you go for therapy, you're getting blamed for being a man, you know? So let's get real and let's create spaces where men can come in and feel safe and feel heard. That's the biggest thing. Healing begins when men are able to talk about and they are heard. That's the big thing.
Very important, heard. Now, I want us to go back to your book, The Pumpkin Van, A Story of Recovery, Hope, and Honesty. I see the cover there. There's a bus, a VW bus. Fascinating. Yes. I mean, it was one of those books that I won't just easily pass, especially when I'm in a, you know, bookshop. I'll be tempted to, you know, page through it because
especially when it's in popular psychology.
Indeed. Because of, you know, the cover there.
Yeah.
What story are you telling?
Well, the cover is very, you know, I mean, I went to my daughter, who's a bit of an artist, and I said to her, darling, I want you to paint this in a very childlike way, you know. And she did. And I looked at it and I went, that's perfect. And she was like, no, man, it's terrible. Let me redo it. And I'm going like, no, I don't want that. And again, it's a depiction of the men's state of mind, right? So the drawing just depicts something masculine, the old combi, you know, we used to like go down to Durban in the combi with the surfboards and smoking a J and, you know, and like freedom and all that sort of stuff. But it's painted in such a way that it's emotionally showing that men are still very childlike. And that is the truth. You know, men who've been abused and have suffered victimhood and emotional, whatever, abuse, right, are emotionally stunted. You know, I always say that men, if you're abused at 13, that's where your emotional growth stops. right? So you grow physically, but emotionally you're still a kid. So in situations where you get stressed and worried and feel threatened, you respond like a 13-year-old boy, right? So that the cover depicts that. And then if you want to know why the pumpkin van, well, you've got to buy the book and read it. I'm not going to get that one out.
Indeed. I mean, it's a fascinating book, I can tell. Hey, 074-577-9461. If you just tuned in, we are in a conversation with our expert, who is Martin Peldes. He is a jack of all trades, eh? Founder of Matrix Man Africa, mental health and wellness coach, activist and public speaker, and the author of a book titled The Pumpkin Van, of which we are talking about tonight, and also wrapping up the month of June, which is very important for us to talk about the gender-based violence and sexual abuse towards men as we wrap up a month that focuses on mental health towards men. And it's very important for us not to only dedicate this month to talk about certain challenges that men go through. We need to speak about them over and over and help men deal with them, because of, you know, as we grow, we're told you are strong, you're a man, you're a leader. You know, you need to, you can't just be vulnerable like that, you know. Mm. And there's so many challenges that men go through. Martin, I want you to talk to either a young, old, middle-aged man listening to you.
you've been super kind.
Listening to this conversation as we wrap up the interview. What would you like to say to that particular man listening right now?
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, if you're feeling like life is overwhelming and you're struggling, you know, you don't feel confident in your work environment, you don't feel confident enough to land the chicks and, you know, do all the stuff that men are supposedly supposed to do, like champions, then give us a call, you know. Find somebody that you can talk to. Try and get that help and that support that you need. Right. And we do offer that at Matrix Men. So we'll offer support one-on-one for those that can afford it. We have to survive somehow. As you understand, there's not a lot of funding available for men's issues. It's mostly for the ladies. So we'll do one-on-one therapy for people that can afford it. But then we also do group therapy. So yeah, we can slot you into a group, even if it's just a men's support group, you know, where men can get together and talk about things. But don't leave things unresolved, because these things spill over into anger and violence and that sort of stuff. And you know, I often deal with a lot of guys that are abusive towards their wives, and I've never met a wife beater who wants to be a wife beater. Mm. They hate themselves, man. They are so disgusted with the things that they do, but they just don't know any other way to deal with it. Mm. And when you come and sit down with us, we have anger management that we can take you through, and it teaches you to manage that anger. Firstly, understanding where it comes from, what the origin of that anger is, how to manage it. And then quite often we find the guys stop beating their wives.
No, you spoke about confidence, right? And the importance of you know, having confidence as a man, or being confident. How do I go about building confidence as a man? Because
lovely question.
To be honest with you, it's a key to so many things.
Yeah,
confidence.
Yeah,
and there's so many men living day to day life.
Yeah,
with a low self esteem.
So, like, we're in the Wits Arts building, right?
It's called
busking, right? So many men are busking through life. They're just, like, jamming on, you know? And the biggest issue with men that don't have confidence is they don't have identity, right? And identity often comes from the father. Can you see another problem here? right? 68% fatherlessness in South Africa. So boys are growing up without that role model, or that positive role model. They're not getting the identity that that they need to get from their fathers, and they get lost along the way. So now we got mommy's trying to shape this boy into something that she expects him to be, but it's not masculine. So the guy grows up confused, doesn't understand what masculinity, then starts perceiving masculinity as strength, okay, six pack, big pecs, that sort of stuff. And that's not it, you know. I mean, your confidence doesn't come from your car, your clothes, your job, your bank balance. Your confidence comes from your heart. Your confidence comes from identity, right? And if you're struggling to find that identity, you need to get yourself a mentor, get yourself an older role model, somebody that can help you to shape and form that masculine identity. And once you got that identity, nobody can shake you. Somebody comes up and says, ah, you're such an asshole. You go like, yeah, if that's what you think, it's cool, you know, walk on. And this is where a lot of violence comes in. A lot of guys don't have the confidence to approach women, right? Mm. And women are being empowered, so they're like very aggressive and they're saying, hey, back off, you know, all that sort of stuff. And guys don't, and the funny thing is women are attracted to that confidence, right?
Yeah, yeah.
One of the first things they say, what attracts you? Man, confidence, right? So you can be short, plump, be confident, and be attractive, right? Because you have that identity. So guys that don't have that identity and don't have that confidence end up getting violent to try and control their environment, to try and keep that girl by their side. And they don't realize by doing that, they're pushing them away, right? Mm. So you create this vicious cycle, and that's why you end up with a femicide. And the guys, I had a guy the other day, the guy's a doctor, and yeah, everything looks fantastic. His life from the outside, wow, amazing. Wife, children, big house, nice car, all that sort of stuff. Accomplished man. He's specializing in a field of medicine, et cetera, et cetera. One day comes home, snaps, stabs his wife 12 times.
Yeah.
You know? Hmm. Why? Now, when we start getting into that, why? Right? Abused as a child. Right, lacks confidence, was using his status and his job and everything as his confidence. And that's not it. Mm-hmm. The confidence comes from here. Confidence comes from knowing who you are, having identity. Mm.
Thank you so much, Martin, for joining us right here on Voice of Vets 88.1 as we wrap up the month of June, reflecting on what has been an eye-opening and powerful journey, a month dedicated to unpacking men's health struggles and silent battles. The pumpkin van, a story of recovery, hope, and honesty, written by Martin Peldes. Where do I get this book?
So it's available on Amazon. It's available on Kindle, Amazon. It's available exclusive books, bargain books, or online. Just search for Martin Peldes, The Pumpkin Van. You'll get it.
All right, to wrap up the show, we have a feature called Truth or Tale. This is where we play a clip, and you'll have to let us know whether it is a scientific fact or a myth.
Okay.
Let's get.
Is it scientific fact or is it an opinion? Wellness Booth.
Being sexually abused will make you an abuser.
Oh, big myth. Oh, big myth. Big myth. So, yeah, one of the things that I struggled with was when my daughter was born, right? I mean, I tried 10 years to have a child. I was like always, you know, victims of abuse always go like, I want to have children because I want to show the world that I'm not like my parents, right? So you have this child. And then one day I was busy changing a nappy and this little devil popped on my shoulder and he said, you're going to hurt her. And then an angel came up and said, no, you're not. And he was, yes, you are. No, you're not. Yes, you are. No, you're not. And it created this war and this conflict in my head, right? Truth is, I would never hurt her because I loved her too much, right? But the narrative, the story that this myth is true is deeply ingrained in the brain. And you start thinking, well, I am. But we need to look at the other side of it, right? Because of the abuse that I suffered, right, I resorted to anger. And that is a form of abuse. I resorted to verbal abuse, because I'm trying to defend this little boy inside of me that is so hurt and so broken, right? So I use my strength. I'm not a small guy. I use my size. I use my big voice. I use my words. I use all of that to try and keep people away from me so that they don't hurt me again. So you need to kind of clear that one up. But it's not just a given that every man or woman who was sexually abused will go on to sexually abuse.
All right. Thank you so much once again, Martin. Pelders, for those who'd like to get hold of you, how can they do that?
You can search for Martin Pelders online or Matrix Men.
MatrixMen.org.
And my email is there. It's martin@matrixmen.org or martin@martinpelders.com.
FM Rewind, File 88.1.